from KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Not all of us can point to one moment that changed our life. Lemon Anderson can. He was in prison serving time for armed robbery when he read some poetry. In the documentary Lemon, he says poetry helped him make sense of his life, a life hustling and selling drugs on the streets of Brooklyn.
What I loved about poetry in jail when I used to read it was it gave me an opportunity to say things that poor people have a hard time saying. It took me in, but no one else wanted to take me in and gave me hope.
The filmmakers Laura Brownson and Beth Levison met Lemon Anderson when he was writing a stage show about his life, all built around his poems. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentaries by profiling the film they've created. It's called Lemon. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Lemon Anderson grew up in Sunset Park in Brooklyn. It was a housing complex at the corner of 23rd Street and 4th Avenue. And if you lived in the neighborhood, you knew his building was where you could go to get drugs. You could buy them from Lemon, who lived with his mother and stepfather, both addicts. He lost his stepfather when he was 12. His mother contracted AIDS from an infected needle and died when he was 14. And at some point in this tumultuous life, Lemon Anderson found poetry. His first experience actually performing came at an open mic night at the El Puente Community Center. He tells of the experience in a piece he calls The Poem.
A poetry reading. Options, the open mic list being full to the crowd. And for the first time, I feel like I have something to say. I beg the host to give me a shot. Hear me roar. There's only one problem. I don't have a poem.
Anderson builds his poetry around his experience, and he's been successful. He shared a Tony Award for the Deaf Poetry Jam on Broadway, and he figured he had made it out of the projects. But it wasn't long before he was back with his wife and kids living with the in-laws. That's when the filmmakers Laura Brownson and Beth Levison met Lemon. He was trying to create a stage show about his life, and so they followed him around to see what would happen. The result is a documentary called Lemon. Today in the program, we're talking about it as we continue our series on documentary film. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Lemon Anderson is a poet, a performer. He won a Tony Award, as I mentioned, for the Deaf Poetry Jam. His autobiographical memoir, County of Kings, was produced by Spike Lee at the Public Theater in New York. We're telling the story about this as we go along. It's been performed across the United States and Europe and South Africa. Lemon Anderson is joining us today from NPR West in Culver City, California. And Lemon Anderson, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to hear from Laura Brownson and Beth Levison here in a moment, but I wanted to start with you because I wanted to start with an excerpt from the film. You're talking about your experience in prison. This was in Rikers Island, and it's your first opportunity to really read books. Let me play this excerpt from the film, and then I want to have you talk about it.
I just felt like this is the perfect time to learn how to read well. Going through a lot of books was something I really wanted to do while I was in prison, and I had the time to do it. I took one poem. Changed my life. One poem. That's it.
What do you mean, one poem?
Depends on the reading or the writer. It took one poem for me to perform at a community center, and someone saw me perform, and they were leading a theater troupe that went around the city in New York and did skits on prevention and violence and went around to the schools. So they hired me to be in this troupe. And then I started believing that that was my destiny, that I had to be a performer, a writer. And I started developing these small skits and writing poems for the school systems in New York. So that, you know, when I performed, so that was the one poem as a performer that I wrote on stage. Right before I got on. And then the other poem, actually, when I was incarcerated, was a poem really that I found in an anthology that was written by the inmates in Rikers Island called The Pen. And in these poems, I found a poem that just related to me. I thought that was what poetry did after that. I felt like, well, I guess poetry is you are supposed to write things that people don't know how to put into words, and You're supposed to be there to describe these feelings and help heal or give an insight or an outlook on things, and that people really didn't know how to put into words. So that poem was really about a relationship, and it was really great to see it that way, and for poetry to be that effective in my life at that point, because I needed to know that I wasn't alone. So
you say in the film that poetry gave you an opportunity to say things that poor people have a hard time saying, and that it doesn't discriminate. That was another thing you say in the film.
Well, yeah, no. Poetry to me is, as an art form, it's the most honest art form in the world. And you see that in the young spoken word community. A lot of the young spoken word and poetry community that's all over the world are really scorned and flawed and have issues, and music doesn't allow them to be free with their voice. It just, you know, there's a market involved, and there's all these politics you have to go through in order to get a record out, a real record out, where in poetry, it's really about how flawed are you and how well can you entertain it. And that's the community, and I gravitated towards that more than I did towards my own cultural music or expression, which was hip-hop.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about how you've always been, in some ways, a kind of a performer, that you talked about yourself as being a daydreamer. And there's this poem in the show and in the film where you talk about the first time you were really aware of being in front of a crowd. I want to play an excerpt from this piece. It's a poem called Himalaya. But set it up for us, because you were really, really young when this experience happened.
Yeah, I grew up in a real strong dance culture. I was born right into the disco era, and that faded into a street dance era called hip hop, and I was in between that. So this was right in between in my life, where I was trying to just be free. And I was a young kid. I was about maybe 7 or 8 years old, and I was dancing in Coney Island at a ride called the Himalaya that spun around in circles, and that's when it really started for me. The first thought that I could ever remember as a kid was me and my mother going to Coney Island. Himalaya ride was like a big party. When the sun started to go down, everyone would go to the Himalaya ride and just kind of dance in the street. And that was the first thought that I could ever remember. This moment of mine, medium rare, so I don't let her down. Every shimmy, every shake, every slide, every glide slides in sync. The crowd tightens their cipher. Black folks look at me quicker than I give them my two-step, this get-out-of-town look. It's like no one or nothing else exists but their soul clap and the stained glass river Nile of tears, salty, stinging my mother's smile. I could hear her pitch perfect in the background yelling, "That's my boy."
It's Lemon Anderson from the film Lemon. Let me get the filmmakers involved in the conversation now. Laura Brownson and Beth Levison are the producers and directors of the documentary. It's their first collaboration. Brownson is joining us from NPR West, and Beth Levison is joining us from WBAI Radio in New York City. And Laura and Beth, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
I want to start, Laura, with you, I guess, because as I understand it, you were the first to really see Lemon perform out of the two of you. How do you describe your reaction to that first performance when you saw Lemon perform for the first time?
You know, it was really a visceral experience, I think. I, not being a spoken word fan necessarily, you know, I knew of spoken word and I'd probably seen it performed, you know, a few times, but that was not what I, you know, that was not what I was following at all. And Lemon was up as part of a fundraiser for a small theater company called American Place Theater, and I happened to be in the audience, and I watched him perform this poem. Actually, it was called Attica. And, you know, it was a combination of the strength of his ability to kind of captivate an audience, but in addition to that, to really communicate within his poetry this incredibly interesting, heartfelt backstory of a young man, young boy, to an audience who had zero kind of life experiences in common with him. Mm-hmm. And that entire audience was just riveted by him. So that was my first experience, and I really was just, as a filmmaker, really drawn to his story and kind of wanted to find out more.
You know, it seems like that tension between Lemon on the stage and as you said, theatergoers, many of which didn't have experiences remotely like Lemon's, that seems to be almost a theme in the film, that kind of relationship, him trying to relate to them, to try to, you know, take the piece a little bit further. Did you identify that as a theme early on?
Yeah, you know, Lemon uses the word transcend quite often, and it was very much for Beth and I part thematically in an important part of the film. And you know, we talked a lot about, you know, the bridges that Lemon was creating and crossing, both metaphorically and realistically. You know, he was going from Brooklyn to Manhattan. And, you know, that those gaps between those two worlds and how to close them and the barriers that are real that may stand in his way. That was very important for us to explore.
Well, Beth, I know that you and Laura took Lemon to lunch at some point. What was that like? What were you talking about? What did you have in mind in terms of how the film might play out, at least in those early days?
It's funny. I don't know that I necessarily remember what we talked about, but I really remember the feeling. Huh. Laura had seen Lemon perform and thought that there might be something here, and we were friends at the time. And I myself wasn't really a so-called fan of spoken word either, and I just didn't really know. So we thought, well, let's sit down and have lunch with him and talk and see what he's like as a person, see what he's like off stage, and find out what's happening. And what I remember was just at that lunch being confronted by so many contrasts all at once and sort of how complex Lemon was, sort of street in some ways on the outside and clearly so sensitive on the inside, and maybe someone I... And also just incredibly eloquent and articulate, and it challenged so many of my assumptions, I guess. And all I remember is that Laura and I walked to the subway at the corner of 34th Street and 8th Avenue in New York City, and we said, we have to do this. We just have to do this. And we knew that he was going to be mounting some version of the show, and we shook hands, and I descended into the subway, and that's the beginning of the story.
Okay, so Lemon, you're walking back from lunch. What did you think?
Thanks for paying for lunch. You know, it was at a point in my world where I bought into the media side of the two filmmakers. I really was like, okay, another documentary that I can add on to my, you know, to my artistry, right? To me as an artist, I think every artist has somebody documenting their work. Cool. I didn't think I was going to allow them into my home personally and into my world. I was just kind of like buying into this kind of what everyone else was doing, what every other artist was doing. It was like everything was so multimedia based at that point, you know, for the artists that I would look... You know, I was around and looking up to all my friends who were just coming off of Deaf Poetry. They were documenting their albums, you know, right before, you know, so they can put it together into a CD. You know, everyone was exploring, like, oh, the CD comes out. It comes with a documentary attached to it, you know, and I felt like, oh, yeah. Well, I guess that's what we do.
Right.
So I was kind of looking at two filmmakers like, that's what I want out of this, right? I want to develop this show and have a, you know, a small documentary viral spot, you know, that you can see what I did. But it ended up becoming a 3.5-4 year relationship, and they were allowed to come into my home even unexpectedly, you know.
Well, we'll talk about some of those scenes as we go, because I think Laura and Beth, that's kind of what it's about. Is I think you, even the viewer, gets an initial sense that this is what Lemon's in this for. Is it's a good, it's a marketing tool for the, you know, for his meal ticket, and it really just becomes so much more complicated. That relationship between the poetry, you know, as a piece of art, and the poetry as the meal ticket, and his relationship to it, it just gets deeper and deeper. And I'm sure you didn't plan it that way, but it certainly comes across that way, that at first it seems like it's going to be one thing, and then it just, you know, becomes something really different.
I mean, I think that from Beth and my perspective, when Lemon sort of signed on, I think we knew that he didn't really know what he was signing on for. I think we knew that our intentions were far more than just, you know, recording his making of a show, that what we were most interested in was his character, all the complexities of his, you know, incredibly tough backstory, how that affects his art, but also how it affects his life, his personal life, his relationships to his wife, his children, his the people he was working with, etc. And, you know, we saw his poetry as a beautiful way to kind of stitch together the story, but the heart of the story was very much the verite filmmaking. And I think we knew that from the beginning. So Lemon slowly but surely got on board with, you know, these two crazy women who wouldn't leave him alone.
Right.
Eventually just let us in the door because he didn't really have a choice.
Yeah. I want to talk about... go ahead, sorry.
But I would just add, you know, we started shooting 3 weeks after that lunch. So, you know, for us it was such a learning experience ourselves. We... you know, one of the earliest things we shot was actually that poem that you just played, Himalaya. So we knew that the poetry was going to be really important to the film.
Yeah.
But I think that even we didn't know what that balance was really going to be between show and poetry and sort of behind the scenes to some degree, you know, Lemon's life, because we had no idea what was going to happen. So what's really interesting is that the film in its own way is about our, you know, learning about Lemon and kind of knowing who he is as we went along. And I think we had ideas at the outset, but that the film certainly found its voice as we continued to go.
Mm. I wanted to talk about the show itself. Lemon, this is The County of Kings. It's also subtitled A Beautiful Struggle. And let's explain, if you would, how you built it, because it's built around. It's not just you reading poems. I mean, there are monologues in here, and there are stories in here. It's about your upbringing, growing up in New York. Where did the idea come from? I mean, how did you sort of weave it all together, I guess?
As a poet, I come from the theater world. I don't really come from the slam world.
Yeah.
Although my peers are slam poets. Most of the cast members in Deaf Poetry Jam on Broadway or the TV show were slam poets. That wasn't my background. My background was more of an open mic theater poet. So I was building a show at New York Theater Workshop, a play called Slanguage. So I was already involved in doing theater. And I happened to be around artists like Eric Bogosian, mm-hmm. Danny Hock, John Leguizamo. Mm-hmm. Sarah Jones was mounting a solo show. So I was part of that world, and I would step out of that world to do poetry. Like John Leguizamo uses comedy, I use poetry to tell a solo story, a story about a stage memoir style, you know. And originally, I just wanted to write a book because I was looking up to Perry Thomas on Down These Mean Streets and Man Child in the Promised Land by Claude Brown. I didn't really want to mount a show. But the people at American Place Theater told me, you should perform this because you perform and that's what you do and you should do it. And that's what's really going to work. And next thing you know, I was mounting the show before I was even putting the book together. And it was called The Beautiful Struggle at first. Then I found it to be too literal. I was giving away the subject. And I took that title away and called it County of Kings, which is in more admiration to the kind of theater I like, which is Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And it's felt like County of Kings is the riddle. The riddle is, When you live in Brooklyn, you know that it's Kings County. It's not Brooklyn County. It's like Queens County, you know. Mm. But Brooklyn is called Kings County. So I just turned the words around and called it County of Kings because I felt like that was a great sound, you know, the C and the K bouncing because I'm a poet. And that's really how it started. You know, I come from the theater world as a poet, and I'm not new. Obviously, we all know poetry has been around in the theater for a long, very, very long time. And poets were originally the playwrights, they were called, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm part of that tradition. I didn't make anything new up. I just use poetry to tell my plays, and my characters speak in poetics. Many of my monologues have characters. All of my new play, all the characters speak in cryptic slangs. You know, it's
wow.
It's the gift. So
yeah.
I use that to tell stories.
You're a big fan of Shakespeare. I guess I wonder. Do you wonder what Shakespeare would have done with life in the projects?
He did it.
Yeah,
he did it. He did do it. You know, many of the plays, there's always these economies that we see in plays, in Shakespeare plays, you know, it's, whether it's soldiers going off to war from, you know, poor upbringings. You always see, like, the clown to me always represents the life of the ghetto child in Shakespearean plays, you know. So they're the ones who reveal the truth. And Shakespeare, being able to be part of a Shakespeare intensive at the Public Theater, really stepped my game up. And helped me understand that me and Shakespeare had a lot in common. The dynamics were there and the passion for giving a language to characters that are not really their language, you know,
yeah.
If you notice.
Yeah.
Even the characters rhyme. You know, there's many plays where the characters go off in dialogue and the dialogue has an offbeat, iambic rhyme scheme. And so it's nothing new under the sun for me. And, you know, yeah, I am a big fan and I can't wait to study more, actually. So it's great.
But Beth and Laura, maybe you could explain what's the show like as an audience member? You know, how it paces, how it sort of moves.
It's funny because we've seen it so many times now, and I think when you're filming it, you can't really experience it somehow in the same way that just recently he brought it to Los Angeles, and I got to sit in the audience, and it was almost like someone sucked the wind out of the air out of the room. It was so intense. It is an intense experience. I mean, it's funny as often as it's tragic. He really has some incredibly funny moments as well that maybe our film doesn't give him credit for, but it's intense.
I want to play a moment if it's okay. The section called Watch Me. This is, I guess, Lemon, at least I get a sense from the documentary, this is kind of right off the bat.
Yeah, it's the intro. Yeah. It's kind of like the yeah. Maybe Beth could tell you because, you know, she knows the film better than I do.
Well, Watch Me is the opening. I mean, Lemon, you can say, well, Watch Me is the opening poem, the open to Lemon's show. So it's this amazing opening. And, well, we thought about using it as our own, but we ended up not doing that, so.
Watch me and my 1983 Bop G, New York City, Sunnyvale, Q's, Union Square, and the Roxy's. Watch how these American Idol Simons try to stop me. Hate me when I walk through the door. Love me when I blow up the spot. Please, man. When they first see me, they never take me serious. Till they find out my talent don't come from the color of my skin, but from my wholehearted experience. So watch me and my story, how I lived it. If you was my mother, every morning I'd be walking you to the methadone clinic. My older brother's in Iraq, killing corner store Arabs. America, I don't forgive it. So watch me deal with the ridicule and shame, the worst heartache and pain, and how I maintain is by turning myself into the king of the poetry spit fame. Watch me turn my pennies into dimes, my darkness into shine, many of my mistakes into nailing it forever one time. Watch me make love to hard work ethics, cause game without ambition is game never respected. These are not words, these are my blood, sweat, and tears, from the real side of Franklin County to them Sunset Park piers, and my homies in the prison yard still finishing their years, cause I'm an ex-con, but an ex-con is has always been a friend of me. Don't discriminate, because it was written that even Jesus had a felony. So watch me be the artist who was born ready-made. Watch me take my lemons and make the best goddamn lemonade.
Watch me. It's from the film Lemon. Lemon Anderson is a poet and performer. He's with us today. Laura Brownson and Beth Levison are directors and producers of the documentary Lemon. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Radio West and the Utah Film Center are going to be presenting a free screening of the film. It's at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. There's going to be a Q&A with Lemon Anderson and Laura Brownson immediately following the film. Laura's going to be with us. We're not sure if Lemon is yet. He's up for a part. We're waiting to find out. So if not, he'll join us by Skype or in person. We should also mention the documentary is going to be airing on Friday, October 19th, as part of the PBS series Voces. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary film. We're profiling a piece called Lemon. It's about a poet named Lemon Anderson. Grew up in the projects of Brooklyn, lost his parents to drugs, served time for drugs. He was in prison where he found poetry, helped him make sense of the life that he had led. If you can join us for the screening of the film tomorrow night, you'll see that Lemon has a remarkable gift. The film is about that gift and his drive to stage a show that he's built out of his poetry. Lemon Anderson is joining us today on the program. He's with us from NPR West in Culver City. We also have with us Laura Brownson and Beth Levison, the directors and producers of the documentary. Laura's also in Culver City, and Beth is joining us from WBAI, a radio in New York City. We're presenting, as I mentioned, the free screening tomorrow. We'll give you more details about that as we go along. Okay, so I wanted to talk about one of the main storylines, and kind of surprising, and it's great tension, I have to say, is the relationship that Lemon has with the American Place Theater in New York. They have this commitment to performing innovative work on the stage for young people, and they've really opened themselves up to Lemon. Laura or Beth, talk about David Kenner, if you would. He was, anyway, the executive director of American Place Theater. Because he's kind of a main character in some way. He talks about this tension between Lemon's work as a piece of art and Lemon's work as a something that they could maybe make some money off of. Talk about David Kenner.
Yeah, I mean, David's a really interesting character. Of course, David gave Lemon a place to write, and that was clearly really important for Lemon. And it was at that table in American Place Theater where Lemon started writing his show and developing it, and also performing it for young people. And when we spent time there filming, it couldn't be sort of a warmer atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that David is a really complex character. I think that he saw Lemon in some ways as part of the family, maybe a son to some degree, or sort of, you know, we actually knew that he was, that Lemon was sort of the hero to David's own son. David is this person who, he's a dreamer, and he both saw Lemon's talent and appreciated Lemon's talent. And then I think that David see that perhaps there was an opportunity for this stage this show to reach not only young people but legitimate theater audiences. Yeah. You know, to go to the an official stage. Not that kid stages are unofficial, but so there was perhaps a little bit of tension there because of David's feelings for Lemon and perhaps David's hopes for the play itself. I think that all along, David, of course, wanted what was best for Lemon, and I think that David saw, get some credit to some degree because he really did see the incredible potential of this work that yeah. Lemon had created.
Well, it doesn't beat David up by any stretch. I mean, it's so interesting just the way it plays out. Let me play another excerpt from the film because this is David talking about how committed he is to Lemon. and that really it isn't about making money off of this show.
I see the effect that he has on people, and it's f***ing, it's earth-shattering, and that's the only reason I'm doing this. So the personal stake is way beyond, I don't give a f*** about money. I have a serious commitment to this on the level that it needs to be committed to, and that's why Lemon stuck with me. I know that.
But then there's this kind of underlying ambition that the piece takes on. David talks about how he starts to see the ambition in this poetry. Lemon, what do you make of the way this sort of moved? I mean, because you were obviously caught up in it. You felt conflicted about we'll talk about the other theater that comes into play here in a moment. But your sense of commitment to David and that theater and whether this, you know, I mean, how are you feeling about all of this?
You know, I still have a relationship with American Place Theater, and I never really tried to let the let the play go from American Place Theater or David Kenner. I tried to work into David's vision at that point, but there was other relationships that came on board that I had prior to David. There were developers that I have known from the downtown art scene who I guess were waiting for me to put something together. And I finally put something together in a space like American Place Theater where things get crafted well. There was time for me to write. There were the haunting of all these great writers on the wall were staring at me. So it was a really great space to chase, you know, the kind of integrity I knew I needed to make it a great piece, at least, you know. And David was there, and he saw me working every day, and he knew the hard work I put in. I was stuck in the middle of if David can move forward with me.
Yeah.
Can David move into these other relationships with me? And I would have totally took that on. At one point, I felt they didn't want to take him on, and I was stuck choosing between moving forward where maybe I think the piece could help me and my family and help me establish myself as in my own identity, because I was part of an ensemble. I was part of deaf poetry. I was part of a TV show, and I couldn't separate myself. So this next theater was offering me the opportunity to really establish my own identity and my own voice in theater and as a writer and performer. And I just didn't think that they were trying to take anyone else on because they had it down. They had their system down, and they were a well-known and respected theater that I love to put work in. So I was stuck in the middle. So I couldn't really bring Dave on board. And his ambition was high, so high that no one really understood it except me.
Yeah.
And I was stuck in that position. And it was heartbreaking, totally heartbreaking. I don't know if the film shows that, but it was heartbreaking for me to... I never left. As a matter of fact, I kept making phone calls back to American Place Theater. I kept staying in touch with the staff there. I kept my director, who I found there. Still to this day, I have a director from there. I stood in touch with Wynn Hanman, and I came to his classes to talk about the work and how influential he is in my life, and I still do that to this day. So,
you know, Laura and Beth, there is a scene where Lemon shows up and he talks to David and some of the other people at the American Place Theater that is so filled with tension. And it's really awkward because in some ways you get a sense that David feels, I don't know if betrayed, but it certainly didn't turn out like he hoped it had. And Lemon is really emotional. He's trying to get the, you know, American Place Theater to help a little bit. He's really vulnerable in this moment, and I wanted to play just an excerpt from this scene, but would you talk about this moment? Because it's such a tense kind of, I don't know, tense was the word I kept coming back to moment in the film.
I mean, you know, I think that's the scene that you're referencing is, it's one of the scenes that really makes the film in a way, and it was at a moment when, yes, Lemon was not at all sure what was going to go on with the show, and he kind of went back to American Place Theater to say, let's try to, you know, bridge this gap. And David was very scorned in some ways.
Yeah.
And I think he was very disappointed and angry. The wonderful thing about David Kenner, for me, I mean, he's a fabulous character because the man wears his heart on his sleeve. He is just all heart. And, you know, all heart does not necessarily translate to being the best theater producer, but he is all heart. Mm. And he really was did create a place for Lemon to make this show. But there did come a time when choices, tough choices needed to be made. And David was disappointed by those choices, and this scene is, you know, it captures that for sure.
You're sitting in an office that is no longer. We're done. And we're going to move to a smaller quarters, continue to try to rebuild the program as much as we can. And I wanted you on that team.
I'm a three-time felon. Look, I came out of jail with this. You know what I mean? And those people need an opportunity to see somebody like them shine. So I gotta shine. Okay? So I'm going up in the fall, and I'm gonna crush the city, and you guys are gonna roll with me, regardless if you can do it or not. Okay? Because I'm coming to really shut this place down.
From the film Lemon. Lemon Anderson is a poet and performer. He's with us, Laura Brownson and Beth Levison, directors and producers of the documentary. I'll remind you, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Radio West and the Utah Film Center are going to be presenting a free screening of the film. It's the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. There's going to be a Q&A with Lemon and Laura immediately following the film. Laura's going to be with us in person. Lemon, we're hoping he will be, but he may be joining us by Skype. We'll find out about that a little bit later. And we should mention that the documentary is also going to air later this month as part of the PBS series Voces. We need to take another break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling a piece called Lemon. We're going to be screening the film tomorrow night. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. Lemon Anderson, poet and performer, is with us, joining us from NPR West in Culver City. Laura Brownson is also there at NPR West in Culver City, and Beth Levison is joining us from WBAI Radio in New York City. Lemon, I wanted to ask you about. There's a moment in the show. I want to play another moment where one of these, you're performing for a group of students, and one of the students says to you, "Good luck in the studios," which means, you know, good luck making your rap album. And here's how you respond.
You know what? I chose to do what I wanted to do, and take it to the next level. Poetry gave me the space to be honest, and entertain that honesty, where rap music really didn't do that. I can't wait for a rapper to come out and say that he got problems, that he got issues. Instead, they talk about what they got, and it's not necessarily, that's not true.
Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, of course I do. I'm protecting my art form forever. I'm a poet. That's my first title. The great writers I look up to, Tennessee Williams, T.S. Eliot, Robert Penn Warren, all those guys were poets first. I can write plays, we can work on films and you know, develop scripts all day, but there will be a poetic voice in the work I do, and I protect poetry forever. I am not a rapper. I come from that world where it started, so automatically there's a hip-hop culture to, like, based to my work, you know, it's like, but I am a fanatic when it comes to this poetry, you know. I'm just, it's an honor.
Yeah.
It saved my life. It's like someone decided they wanted to show up to a kid who has potential to do anything they wanted to do in their life and gives them a job at McDonald's. 20 years down that road, that kid will become a person who owns 4 or 5 branches, right? Mm. This is what I do. And poetry came into my life and became that guy, that boss that showed up and said, "Hey, I'll give you a job." And I turned around and honored that boss. And I'm still like that. It's a code for me.
But surely somebody must have said to you, "Lemon, you could make so much more money if you'll just add a backbeat and do an album."
Nope. No one has ever done that.
Really?
So, well, you know, I was with Russell Simmons, so I could have been blinded by that.
Right.
And I You know, I could have been like, hey, I could be a rapper, you know? That's not what he hired me to do. He hired me to be a poet. Hmm. I dreamed of doing poetry on Broadway. I had, you know, people say, oh, theater is theater. Not to me. I like rocking crowds. I like transcending and selling tickets. It's not about like, oh, you sold out. Yeah, every seat in the house. Right? That's for me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's just how I'm built. And I love poetry and I love what it does. And I love that you can manipulate it. You can work tone. You don't have to. It's not all words to me. It doesn't work in my imagination that way with poetry. Poetry is just a text. And how do I enhance the text? What do I give it? Should I give it a character? Should I make it a narrative? Should I stick, the poetry in this prose I'm writing? You know, it depends. And so it's just my first title.
You know, there's this, I think in some ways, to me anyway, the film was also about the integrity of your show, of your piece. I mean, because there's this scene where the public theater, at the public theater, when they pick up the show, there's this very prestigious theater in New York, and they're going to do a run. And so they start talking about schedules, and then they're also talking about what else it might need. And I really started to worry about how much you were going to, because they ask you to dig deeper. They ask you to, I'm not sure how much they ask you to change, but I started to worry about whether or not you were going to be able to keep it the way you wanted it. Did you worry about that?
No. I knew that me and my director were developing a script that was now going to the next level, which was now a dramaturg, a well-respected dramaturg. Outside of Oscar Eustace being the artistic director at the Public Theater, he is a dramaturg. He's an artist himself, and he's been seeing theater since the 60s. I can't afford that. And so I have to bring this guy on board and take notes from all the things he knows works. And he started to teach me Aristotle and the poetics. I didn't have that approach to my plays or my voice before. And I knew that he was helping me make the character in the show. Oh, he was helping me with the main character, which was me and my backstory in the show, make choices to keep the show moving. So the audience watches a choice lead to another choice, lead to another choice. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the beautiful struggle. I mean, the beautiful struggle was just a long self-expression with backflips and magic tricks, right?
Yeah.
When we got to County of Kings in that version, we started to clean up and we started to edit word by word, you know, for time's sake. For story's sake, some characters didn't work anymore, didn't help. And we still kept editing. Even when I finished the show, I developed a new touring version for the international crowd. I mean, that's just part of it. And even lighting designers and sound designers become part of the editing team. So I knew that coming in. I'm still like that. To this day, I'm always open to what is the new way and what is it that I'm missing as a writer and storyteller. So that this stuff becomes very clear, because I'm going to keep the slang, right? Mm. I'm going to keep the authenticity, excuse me. But how do I keep transcending? So I need other people on board to help me figure that out.
And well, if I can add to that, please. Just one thing that I think is really relevant to Lemon as a character and human being, and really the key to his success in some ways. I mean, yes, he's the hardest worker you've ever met. Yes, he's completely got his head into every moment of every day. How can I improve myself? But one of his real gifts is to learn from the people that he happens to come in contact with. Instead of competing with those people, instead of butting heads with those people, he is like a sponge in this most incredible way. And he, with Oscar Eustace or plenty of other mentors along the way, has really, really opened himself up to learning from them and bettering his craft as an artist. And that it's an amazing thing to just as a friend to watch happen. But, you know, to be able to capture that a little bit on film was also quite amazing.
Well, you get the sense that that's an important part of the way he thinks. And it goes back to this idea of work ethic.
It goes back to work ethic, but also, you know, when you come from a place where you didn't have parents that gave you any of these things, you didn't have an education that gave you these things, and you've got to make up for all that lost time, you know, that's one way to do it. And yes, you better be very hard worker in the process.
Yeah. It's funny what Lemon was just talking about and working with Oscar and... you know, in many ways, the film is about the growth of the play, let's say. I mean, that's sort of the spine to some degree. But it's really also about the growth of an artist. And, you know, it's something that we managed to capture in the 3 years that we were filming. And Lemon is, you know, continuing to grow. But it's about the growth of the artist in sort of actually the broadest way as both a as an artistic person and also just as a person, as a man.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, those were certainly, that was the weave that we were really trying for in the making of the film.
And I have to say also that this was an important part of the film for me. I completely, Lemon, fell in love with your wife. I mean, she is such a great character in this story. Here's another moment, because I want people to hear Marilyn Anderson's voice. She's such an important part, I think, of the way the story plays out. Just talking about... how Lemon is kind of responding to the pressure and the stakes.
I get a little worried, more for his sake than anything, because he's like so driven and he's so, you know, against all odds, like really, really trying to accomplish something that no one around him has accomplished. And he feels like he really owes this to his mother and to all the people that, just all the people that he lost. But I think he would, like, lose his mind if this weren't to go or play out the way he kind of wants it to. Because I've seen him lose his mind.
Beth and Laura, it seems like she's almost, is it fair to say she's kind of one of the hearts to the piece?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, she's
Marilyn Anderson is the unsung hero. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things for Lemon in opening up his life to us is that he's really kept Marilyn and that private side of his life private.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are good sides to opening it up and bad sides. The good side is that everybody who watches the film reacts the same. And it's that Marilyn is... you know, his moral compass and his, you know, true partner. And she's just a strong woman in her own right. And, you know, she's fabulous.
The Rock.
Very lucky.
Yeah, you are lucky. I have to say, I think that, was that hard then to share her in some way, Lemon?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, it's when you start off, and you're naive, right? You know, for me as an artist, and I came out of deaf poetry, that was another thing that was really hard about being in such a commercial environment with Russell, was I had no real perception of what was it like to just be a dad and a real husband. I didn't know, you know, no one around me was actually someone I could look up to, except maybe for Stan Lathan, who was the director, but he was well off, and you know, and I felt like maybe I need to, you know, remain single in the eyes of everyone else. Maybe I need to make it feel like I am not a husband or a father, and maybe there's an attraction there that brings people to me so that I can show them my work then. And I, again, you know, no one took me under their arms and said, no, it's not like that. You can really be honest and you can really just be you. And that's what they want. And so I started to just do that years later. It's been about maybe 4 years since I've been comfortable with my family in public and with my kids. You know, I don't really put pictures of my kids out there because I try to protect them. But and not necessarily because I'm some celebrity. I just don't want no one having pictures of my kids. You know, I'm so protective of my family. But I would rather be home, you know, writing every day with my children in the house. I think that's where I find more peace of mind than anything. And I travel a lot and I love it, but I get homesick very quick because of the kind of, you know, relationship I have with my family. And, you know, it goes to show you that money doesn't buy everything. you know, because yeah. I can't, you couldn't afford the kind of situation I have at home. It's that good.
Right. Well, Laura and yeah. Beth, I don't want to give the end of the film away by any stretch, but it is the family that that really gives him the kind of, the ultimate sense of inspiration, really. We kind of come back around to that. And that seems like he's evolved. He's come full circle in some ways, it seems like, to me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily come full circle. It's that he's really arrived at this place where he's kind of landed and he's on solid ground. And, you know, certainly throughout the film, we see him on ground that is pretty shaky and uncertain. And, you know, he comes to understand in some ways what makes his ground solid. And that's what's kind of wonderful to discover at the end.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest kind of, you have so many creative battles along the way. But, you know, Beth and I together against editors and executive producers, et cetera, felt really strongly that the end of this film cannot be, you know, his triumph on stage, yeah. that yeah. it has to be more than that because, you know, people can succeed on stage, and that means nothing to me. That it's really much more about the kind of person you are. And Beth and I had to stand tough for those creative decisions.
Laura Brownson and Beth Levison are directors and producers of the documentary Lemon. Lemon Anderson, poet and performer. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Radio West and the Utah Film Center are going to be presenting a free screening of the film. It's at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's going to be a Q&A after. We're hoping that Lemon will be with us. Laura will. I know that Lemon will be with us by Skype, either way, so you should tune in for that. And Lemon, Laura, and Beth, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.